Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show. Episode 125 of the podcast. Glad you guys are back for another episode. Today we have James Daniels and Jordan Lomax on the show here to talk with us about the issues going on in Iowa football right now. What are the problems? How can we fix them? What's the best way to move forward? A really productive 90-minute conversation. We hope you guys enjoy it. Let's sit back, relax, and let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 125 of the podcast. And I don't have much to say on the intro today. It's just kind of my pleasure to introduce two of our former teammates. One you guys have heard from before, one you guys have loved for a long time. Man, Jordan Lomax and James Daniels, two guys that we all have a lot of respect for, two guys that are part of a movement that has started at the University of Iowa that I don't really need to talk anymore about myself. So we want to thank you guys. Truly, we appreciate you guys coming on. And we're just here to hear from you and hopefully have a constructive conversation.
No, definitely. Thank you for having us.
We appreciate you coming on. Like we were kind of talking about before we press record. It's easy to, you know, type a bunch of characters on Twitter and send out a tweet. But, you know, we find that having a conversation, having a little ebb and flow, a little give and take, and being able to listen is a lot more constructive. So seriously, guys, we appreciate you taking the time.
No problem.
Absolutely. So JD, I want to start with you. Both of you, I guess. My first question would be, like, obviously in the Iowa community, the last couple weeks have been a whirlwind of just a lot of emotion and a lot. What has it been like for you guys?
Well, first things first, I mean, it's been amazing how, like, much of a family, like, Iowa, like, football is. Like, Iowa, like, former football players. So, I think last week, actually, I think it was last Friday, there was, like, the Zoom call that was organized with, like, a whole bunch of, like, former Iowa football players. And we were just talking about issues like this. On, like, how can we make Iowa football better and like, move forward. I mean, it's just amazing just to see, like, how much, like, support, like, black players, white players, like, how much support and love everyone has for Iowa football. I mean, that's all we're trying to do is just, we're just trying to make Iowa football better.
That's great.
Yeah, I was on the call as well. It was good to hear from guys from the 90s and the Hayden Fridays all the way up until the guys that literally just graduated last year. So it was good to hear from all those guys from very different perspectives. And yeah, like James said, it's awesome to just see a bunch of guys that still care and still want to make Iowa football the best it can be.
Yeah, and but on like the tough side, I guess, I mean, there's been a lot of, like, I've received like a whole bunch of like nasty, like crazy DMs. And like, when I'm like bored, at night, like I'll just like read them. Then I just send, when I get like nasty DMs, I just send stuff that's like completely unrelated to like what they're saying. So it's just like, I think it's kind of funny. But no, I mean, yeah. And on the other side, I have received like a lot of like great DMs, like people like we're proud of you. Just keep on doing what you're doing, because I know you care about Iowa and things like that.
Can I ask you a question? How many of those DMs from the negative side are from burner accounts? Because I don't know about y'all, but it seems like the amount of burner accounts on Twitter has just skyrocketed.
Yeah, it's like they have a burner account, but they're only like they follow like five accounts, and right. It's like Iowa football, NFL, like Colin Kaepernick, Donald Trump. Like there's it's the same like four accounts like that they follow.
Yeah, man. If y'all got something to say out there, say it with your chest.
Say it with your chest. Low, has the experience been similar for you?
Yes, it has been similar. And then first of all, I just want to commend James for being the first one to really step up and voice his opinion and concerns, because I feel like it was something that a lot of the black players that I played with that came before me, this is something that we've thought about. We've had the same sentiments that James expressed on Twitter that night. And, I think as you all guys know, Barta said it in his press conference, like they had the diversity task force and everything go down in, I believe, 2018. So, we were privy to some of that we knew something was going on, because we did want to see a change. And so, I just want to commend James for, like, just taking the step to be the first one to pretty much go out there and voice his opinion. And, a lot of guys, they felt the same way, and we wanted to back you and stand behind you on that, because, like he already stated, we want to see the program move into a better light, and we want the experience for the guys that are coming after us and that are there now, we want to make it a better experience for them. Once again, I just want to commend James. And, for me, I'm not on social media as much, so I don't know if somebody's been DMing me craziness or anything. But, I think it's definitely important conversations that we need to be having, not only in Iowa football, but just around the country. And I think just everything that's going on right now with the George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, I think that escalated a lot of things for it to come out. How we felt like we were being treated in the program. So I think right now with how coronavirus has pretty much just shut down, everything, and it's forced everybody to really have this conversation and to reflect on how we can just make this not only Iowa football better, but, the country better. So that's been my experience with everything that's going on. And, I just want to appreciate you guys for just having us on here to talk about this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, we'll circle back to the, that committee and when mm-hmm. KF brought you in to talk to the team. But I think a lot of people want to know, and something that we kind of brought up on our podcast as well, is that, James, when you did send out that tweet, a lot of people were curious, like, was it your intention to kind of open it up all on Twitter, or did it kind of like take off and take a, just take off out of nowhere? Like, is this kind of like your plan of what you saw happening? And if so would you have,
So the Monday after like the riots in Minneapolis and cross country were happening, we were in like OTAs. And so for like OTAs for the Bears, like we Zoom for like 2 hours, like a day, go over plays, blah, 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 all that stuff. And there wasn't during OTAs that day, instead of going over plays, and it was like the entire team, trainers, like the entire like Bears, I guess like the entire like football part of the Bears. And we had this like Zoom meeting, like people were just like talking about race and just like stories that they had and things like that. And like, first of all, like some of the stories that people had, like about racism and like what's happened to them, like it's crazy. Like you would think like people in the NFL, like when they go jogging in like an all white neighborhood, like people won't call the cops on them. But no, I mean, there's dudes, like there's stories like that. And it was just crazy. And so anyway, like during the team meeting, then I found myself talk, because people were sharing stories. I talked about like how I felt like at the University of Iowa and with the football program and things like that. And then like I received, like some people were like sending me messages like that knew about Iowa football. And they're like, yeah, I know what you're trying to say. Cause my words were kind of mumbled and stuff. And so then Wednesday, so after that meeting Monday, I was like, I'm going to say something on Twitter about the racial inequalities in the Iowa football program. How I'm going to say it or when it's going to happen, I don't know. But after that team meeting Monday, I was like, I think it needs to be said. And so then Wednesday, I see a tweet how Coach Ferentz said that the team is going to decide to like collectively like kneel or stand for the pledge. And so I said something like, if the team decides to kneel, like it'll be big, like it'll be a big culture change for the football program and for the state of Iowa. And then I received a whole bunch of hate on that tweet. And I'm just reading like the replies on the tweet, and people are like, what do you mean? Share stories, share stories, share stories. And so then Friday, I'm at the car shop, and I receive a phone call from a former black football player at Iowa. He's in the NFL now. And he's like, hop on the Zoom call. And so I hop on the Zoom call. It's a whole bunch. I'm the youngest person. I didn't play with anybody in the Zoom call, but I mean, it's a couple players, and they're just talking. They're just sharing their stories about when they were at Iowa and the racial inequalities they faced. And so then the Zoom call is like an hour, hour and 30 minutes. And so then after that Zoom call, I start a Snapchat text message group of all the black players I played with. And then I told them like what my plan was going to do. Like I'm going to send out this tweet. And then they started telling me stories. And the same stories that they were saying were the same stories that the people who played in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, early 2010s were, the stories matched up. And so, I mean, yeah, and that's it. I mean, I sent out the tweet, then all the former players, like they replied to the tweet with stories. And the thing is like, there's a whole bunch of other players who did not share like the stories that they shared. And there was players that did share that could have shared more stories, but they didn't choose to. So it's just, I mean, it was just, there was just so many, it was like, and that's the thing, like people have, like Lo said earlier, like black players in the program have wanted to say something for so long. And it's just been way too long.
So kind of where I was going with this question, and you know, it's a good answer, as far as like where your head is with it. A lot of people are kind of curious, you know, do you really, I mean, looking back, do you think that Twitter was the best place to do this? Or if you could go back, would you have taken it to KF first and say, hey, we've been talking to players from all the way back to way when, and say like, hey, we all feel like we've been mistreated here. We need you to address this. Is that something you'd consider, or do you like the way that it kind of played out?
I think the way it played out, I felt like that was the best way. So in 2017, I mean, Lowe's probably gonna end up talking about this, but in 2017, they had Lomax come back and speak to us, and he spoke to only the black players. And I mean, I'm not gonna say what Lowe said. I mean, he can talk about that. But anyway, before that happened, KF set up this committee within the football team. It was just black players and Coach Ferentz. And like, I think we used to meet. It was like we'd meet like one time. It was usually like after on Fridays, like after game simulator, that like that's when we would meet. But in like we voiced a lot of these concerns. Nobody told, that's the thing, nobody back then, nobody told like the racial stories. Nobody told that to Coach Ferentz. But we did say that we do, as black players, we do feel like we're being mistreated in the program. And some of the stuff that some of the cultures in place in the program, like not wearing hats in meetings, not wearing hats in the building, not wearing earrings in meetings, things like the music in the weight room. Like the music in the weight room, it's like we were always listening to like some 80s or 90s rock and we could never get like a rap song. Like, I just don't get how, like, as a black player, like, why do we have to – there's other black players too. Like, why do we have to lift weights all the time, listen to 80s, 90s, country rock, country music, things like that? Oh, it's just, like, why couldn't we get a rap song in there? So it's like those are – like, we did voice those – we did voice those opinions to Coach Ferentz in 2017. But I know they have changed some stuff. I know they're not allowed to wear earrings now and hats and things like that. But and then in spring of 2019, when I was finishing my degree at Iowa, I met with Gary Barta one-on-one. And I talked to Gary Barta about like the diversity task force. I told Gary Barta about the problems with the Iowa football program and things like that, because anyone who looks at the Iowa football program, they know there's something up with the black players. Like, for example, I had reporters send me the transfer rates of black and white football players at the University of Iowa, and it goes all the way back up to 2012. I have it on my computer right here, so I'm gonna read it.
Sure.
Yeah, so, we know the numbers weren't good.
Yeah, exactly. So in like 2012, there's a total of 13 black players, and this is scholarships coming into college. In 2012, there's a total of 13 black players, 6 finished their career at Iowa. In 2013, there was a total of 12 black players, 4 finished their career at Iowa. In 2014, there was a total of 10 black players, 2 finished their career at Iowa. In the class of 2015, there was a total of 9 black players, 2 finished their career at Iowa. And for the class of 2016, this will be, I mean, if AJ, Barrington, and Chauncey stay on the team, it will be 9 black players finished, then 7 left. That will be the first time since 2012 that more black players that came into Iowa finished than transferred. So it's like these numbers are like, this transfer numbers, like, it's literally like right in front of our face and nobody has ever said anything about this. And so like I was talking to Gary Barta and I was explaining to him like things need to be done within the football program. And I mentioned that Coach Doyle is part of the problem. I did mention that, but I didn't go into much detail, and I felt like I should have went into more detail with Gary Barta back in 2019, and it wouldn't have had to play out like this. But Then this year I tweeted out and stuff. Last week I did meet with Gary Barta and we talked about some of the same things.
So quick question. Going back, you said you guys met with KF in 2017. You said you said something that I didn't fully understand. You said you didn't bring up the race stories, but you felt like you were mistreated. Does that mean like you didn't bring up like some of the stories that were told on Twitter?
Correct. Correct. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't. Nobody told any stories. I mean, I don't remember anybody telling stories about what Coach Doyle exactly did. I don't remember that. That might have happened, but I'm pretty sure nobody did.
So you guys.
What was your guys' main like?
Goal, objective, beef,
whatever you want to call it.
Like, yeah.
What was your guys' main priority with those meetings with KF?
We just wanted to know, like, I mean, Coach Ferentz set him up. We just wanted to know that, I'm trying to think of the word. Everyone in the building recognized coaches. They recognized the problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
because like we were part of that 2017 senior class. We're taking our senior photo, and it's Akram and Miles.
Yeah, and like in the
15
leadership,
white guys. Yeah,
and the leadership committee. That's the thing with the leadership committees. It's like the leadership committees actually after 2017 it changed. Coach Ferentz started to you start to recognize that the coaches recognize that black players aren't in positions of power in the team. So therefore the coaches started to put more black players on the leadership committee. So if you look at the leadership committee photos from 17, 16, 15, I guarantee you there's nowhere near compared as many black players as the committees on 18, 19, and 20. Because it's so, like, right? No, you can say it.
Oh, I was going to say, did they change the process for picking the leadership committee? Because when we were there, it's every class votes for representatives from their own class to be on the committee.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
But see, here's the thing about the voting. There's no, I mean, players, I mean, we don't see the votes. We don't count the votes. And I had a former player DM me, and he said that. So, you know, at the end of the year, how they vote for captains. Sure. He said he knew he received enough votes to be considered the captain, like an end of the year captain, but the coaches didn't give it to him because they thought he wasn't a good leader. A former player DM'd me that. So, yes, we vote for the captains, but I mean, no one else is seeing those votes that the players are giving out.
Sure. And I think I'll admit that
there's been some voting discrepancies, and I'm on your fucking side 1,000%.
Absolutely, we're 100% there with
right.
you. And it comes to game captains too. You know, like every now and then there's a game captain, and everyone's like looking sideways, like, "Did you vote for him?" No, I didn't.
And we're looking at the head coach, like, "Wait a minute, this didn't happen."
Yeah. Shit, I lost my train of thought.
Lo, I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on some of the stuff that James just touched on.
And what
Coach Ferentz's I assume it was Coach Ferentz who reached out to you and brought you in because you were with the university at the time.
Not yet.
Or you hadn't been yet, I guess. What he wanted out of you talking to the black players when you did go in and talk to them that year. And then just some of your other thoughts about what James touched on.
Okay. Yeah. If it's okay, I'm gonna start off like with some of the stuff.
Go James, for it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll go into 2017. So really, I think guys just got to step back and like really understand like, you know, what's going on right now. If you look at the black players for the Iowa football program, a lot of them are coming from predominantly black areas.
Mm-hmm.
Say predominantly black areas. So and when I say predominantly black areas, I'm talking about their community, their schools.
Mm-hmm.
They possibly see people in leadership positions that look like them, and for pretty much their entire years of playing football, they might have been the predominant race on their team. Probably never played with maybe I know when I was playing back in Maryland, I think I had one white player on my team up until I got to high school. Like, my whole boys and girls club team was all black except for one white person. So now, for me, I was fortunate enough. My parents, they sent me to a Catholic high school where it was 50-50. So the culture shock that a lot of guys are getting when they step on campus in Iowa, I got that culture shock as a ninth grader in high school. So sure. I was already prepared, and I knew how to acclimate myself with people that did not look like me. So I think that's where I may have had an upper hand on some of the other black players that are coming from the same type of environments, except they don't experience that until they step on campus at Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really integral dynamic that people have to really digest. And I look at you guys and I say, okay, you know, when you guys were playing Little League, you know, how many black players were on those teams?
And like one or two in my two, case.
And, okay. And I'll venture to say that when you guys got to Iowa, that's probably the most amount of black people you guys ever been on the team with or and ever even been around in that type of environment for that amount of period of time.
Correct.
Yeah.
So when you look at like the black players coming in, you know, we're not only outnumbered on campus in the community in the state of Iowa, we're outnumbered in the building as well. And so you have that culture shock. And so when guys when we come to Iowa, when we're out in the community, we're on campus, and we really don't see a lot of people that look like us, except when we're in the football facility. You know, we expect that place to be our safe haven where we could, you know, relax, be ourselves. Yep. And so when we're out on campus, we're out in the community, we already feel like we cannot be ourselves. And then it's hard when we come into the football complex and expect that we can finally be ourselves and we can finally, you know, breathe a little bit, and we still can't. So it's like, where's the outlet? Where can we express ourselves? Like, yep. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. But so I was saying that's a crazy dynamic, especially for, you're talking about 17, 18 year old freshmen coming into college. That's really tough. Mm-hmm. And what I will say is, you talk about the recruiting process, right? Now it's a lot has changed since we've left college football. But, you know, speaking from my experience, and I'm sure you guys, it's similar. You know, you have your recruiting coach, your position coach, and you're probably talking to Coach Ferentz every once in a while, right?
You're talking to three of the wrong guys, but
So low, I'll step in for the good players. That is the process.
I love when this happens on this podcast. No matter how serious the topic is we're talking about, everybody can get a good laugh for a second at the fact that we suck ass.
Yeah, but anyway, you're right. You're right, Lo. Yes. Continue.
Yes. Yes.
So what I'm saying is, so like, we have our recruiting coach, our position coach, and then, you know, we talk to Coach Ferentz. You know, those are the three coaches that we have that relationship with. We're forging that relationship in high school, right? But the thing is, once we step on campus, we cannot have no interactions, no contact with them. Can't have meetings. They can't be on the football field. The person who they've entrusted us to until that period opens up when we can have contact with them is Chris Doyle, who I think a lot of guys, they don't have that relationship with in their recruitment process. You know, we meet them on our official visits, but we don't know him as a person. So, you know, they shower us with love, and as we're getting recruited, you know, we're hearing good things. You know, it feels like a family environment. And now when I get on campus, technically I can't have position meetings with you. You can't be on the field with me. You're relying on information coming straight from the weight room, where those coaches don't have any restrictions on you throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
And so now what I'm taking it back to is that you're talking about 17, 18, 9 year old black kids, predominantly black environments, predominantly black schools, probably predominantly black teammates in high school, boys and girls club, high school coaching staff. And now you get into an environment where it is totally different, something that you've never experienced in your life. And you don't have that. We haven't built that rapport. You know, Coach Joel, he likes to set the tone first day. He sets the tone. So it's like,
if you're rolling out the wrong way, he's going to let you know.
He's going to set the tone first day.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have that relationship with the players, with us. We don't have it with him. You know, when we walk into the workout and we see him congregating with, you know, the white linemen, and it's like, okay, he's not congregating with us. He's not really talking to us as much as he is to them. And then now, if as a freshman, I mean, you mess up anything, you know, Coach Lowe, he's going to get on you. You mess up. It doesn't matter how small it was, how big it was, he's going to get on you.
So, and now, we'll admit, dude, black or white, we were terrified.
Black or white, yeah. I will say black or white, he's going to get on you. So now as I think like the 17, 18-year-olds, you know, we have some idea of race. You know, we understand, okay, everything is not equal. So when you have – when you come in there your first year, and, you know, he's getting on you for something that, you know, they might see as so small, minuscule. Like, what? Why? I've never encountered someone of this opposite race that's in this position that has this much control and power over my life. Why is he talking this way to us and not doing it the same way to our white players? Or even if he is, why does it feel like we're getting treated disproportionately than as our counterparts? And so that's tough. And then now, you know, you talk about when I was coming in, you know, I heard of the racially insensitive jokes from Terrence Pryor. I know his story was out there. You know, I heard that he said that joke when I was a freshman coming in during the summer. So now I don't even know him as a person, but I heard that he made that joke to somebody that's black. So now automatically anything that he says to me, I'm probably going to think like, yo, does he not like us? Like,
it's a snowball effect.
Is it a double standard? You know, why is he treating me this way? And you know, they don't form. It's almost like you had to earn his respect. He wasn't.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think Doyle's doghouse was different for black and white players? Because we've spoken about his doghouse and how like we all three were terrified of it.
Yeah, and it's hard to get out of. That first year is a bitch because you don't know what the fuck's going on. You're really gonna mess up. Yeah.
And I do think it. And what I will say, it's really tough because, like, once again, it goes back to, you know, understanding the player, knowing where he came from. You know, we expect the player on the first day he comes to campus to already be adapted to this Iowa culture, and it's like, no. Mm-hmm. It's a different experience, different culture, 1,000 miles away from the family. Has never understood, okay, why are we doing this? Why is it so rigid? Why is it rigid?
And
you guys mentioned it, right? Once you get in that doghouse, you got to claw your way out. It's tough to get out, right? So now, even if you mess up on the little thing, they start adding up and they're mounting to the point where you can't get out the doghouse. And it feels like they're trying to push you out the program. He's not the kid we thought he was, but they don't understand. Okay, all right, let's look at his background. Why is he acting the way he does? Why is he acting the way he does? You know, what is his experience? Do we know this kid? You know, I think they looked at me like, if Lomax gets it, but no, you know, I had a totally different background. You know, I went to a Catholic school. I was adjusted. My Catholic school was a college preparatory school. It's different. You can't, I don't think like you can't treat everyone the same as far as in the sense of if they don't understand like the program or like the rules and everything, it's a different level. It's a level to it. And so I think it's all about understanding the players as they come in, knowing that, okay, we got to work with this guy a little bit more than we do with this guy over here. You know, he's already coming into a space where he's not familiar with. And that's going to be tough alone. So now when you start adding all the extra stuff,
the hard line approach appropriate for that individual?
And we touched on this in our episode that we came out with, our first episode back from once all this went down. And you bring it up perfectly, Lo. And I'm so glad we have you on here to shed a light on that experience. You talk about the 17, the 18. I mean, James, you were 17. You were young as hell when you came in. You talk about that experience of them growing up, and everybody has that different background. And there's this idea of you drop some of yourself, and you start to create this identity as this individual. But there's also this idea of giving up some of your own ego, some of your own personal traits, not traits, but personal gain for the good of the team, right? And I think there's a lot of gray area here. And I want to know if you guys think, because I talked to KB, I talked to Coach Kelvin Bell for about an hour on the phone last week or 2 weeks ago. And the same thing came up. It came up in our episode. It came up with Coach Bell. This idea of we went too fast. And you mentioned it. And I never even thought of it that way, Lo, where you're with the coaches and then all of a sudden day one, it's like, all right, Doyle's got you for this. You're talking about that summer period when you come in, right? Yep. That first 2 months before they can really get to you. And it's Doyle and his five assistants that you haven't had any time with during the recruiting process. And now you're all theirs. Is that first 2 months, maybe even extended out to a 6 month period, or maybe your whole first year, is there a time in there, and maybe as we get to the end of this podcast where we talk about solutions, this comes up again, but is that a period where we have to be more lenient and more understanding of each guy's individual background and make sure, Coach Bell talked about making sure that we get the guys to know that this is why we do the way things we do. This is, you know, we do things that let the guys know that the coaches love you. They have your best intent in mind. And we right. kind of have
like,
this
kind of like we do these things for a reason. Like we know like guys who follow this will succeed.
Yeah.
But you know, except instead like that first, you know, few months, you know, you miss a workout, you're late to meetings or something, like two, three strikes, and then you get labeled as, oh my God, this guy's a fucking slapdick.
Yeah.
And
so,
then from there, it's a slippery slope. Like, okay, well, now you're in Coach Doyle's doghouse. You mess up again, and he's going to fucking tear one into you. And you're just not feeling really good about where you're at that point.
And you're having to do all this. It's this micro world of the program where you're trying to stay away from a strike against you here, a strike against you there. You're trying to learn everything, and they expect you to do it 100% the Iowa way right away, all while you're trying to acclimate, like you said, Lo.
Not only to a completely different like culture, Iowa City, to college, like holy shit. Like looking back on it, we asked like a lot of 18-year-old kids.
So is there a leniency period that's needed, Lo and James, or something else in that first 6 months maybe that should be in place to kind of help those young kids?
Yes, I believe so. I think like when they're recruiting the kids, you know, they have to know you know what they're getting. You know, I was talking with Chris Kirksey, and he said it perfectly. He's like, you got to know not only the player but also the person, and that is really huge because if you don't understand the person, then you may not even be able to see the full potential of the player because he's going to end up leaving that program too soon because you guys didn't understand him. So I think it's in the recruiting process, you know, it's understanding that player and understanding, okay, we know we got our work cut out with this one. He may have his down moments, but we're going to work through. We're going to put a plan in place because we're expecting that. It might be tough for him to get adjusted and to acclimate to our Iowa culture because it is tough. Iowa football, it is tough, that's for sure. So there definitely is. I think there is that leniency period, you know. And I was extended out even for a year, really. I don't even know if 6 months will be enough, but I definitely think that leniency period but it all gets down to understanding the person and understanding, you know, what do we have to work with coming in here? Because if you don't understand if you don't understand the person and you just, you know, we recruited him off his highlight tape, and I mean, he's a good player. We thought he was going to do great things for us, but his personality doesn't mesh well with us. Then that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And I heard what you said about as far as, you know, giving up some of yourself. I think it's like, I would say it's more, you know, how can, because at the end of the day, you want them to be themselves. You want them to be themselves. There's certain things that, of course, like it is not okay and acceptable, but at the end of the day, if a kid can't be himself, then you're not going to get the max potential out of him.
Sure.
And it is just little things as far as like, you know, oh, well, we can't wear our earrings. Something that is more, I would say, acceptable in Black culture, when it's fine, like we wear earrings. Like I wear my earrings at work. Like I don't, this is me as a person. So it's like, okay, we can't be ourselves outside of the complex. And then now we come in the complex and you have all these different rules where it feels like it's targeting us. It's tough for guys to get adjusted and be themselves. And I think, but like you said, I definitely think, especially for those, that first year, there definitely has to be that leniency period where we know the guy coming in, he may have some hiccups, but hey, we're willing to work for him. We expected this. So if we expected it, then we should not throw him straight in the doghouse and be like, okay, well, he's not who we thought he was. Let's try to get him up.
And
go ahead, Cliff.
I think where that comes to, guys, is because there isn't that leniency period, and there hasn't been, a lot of times, and you can speak on it from individual experiences, and I would love to hear your individual experiences as well. I think a lot of the fans would like to, and we can listen to that. But because there isn't that leniency period, some of those things you start to get a strike for, now you're in the doghouse for. We talked a lot about perception and reality in our podcast before. Some of those things may be racist, maybe not. The ones that maybe weren't racist or didn't have anything to do with race start to feel like they were because you were Black. Am I correct in saying that?
You are.
Okay. And so then that's really when the snowball effect starts. You start to feel like this specific coach has it out for you. It's all because of who you are, where you're from. And now in that first year, where maybe if you had that leniency period, to understand, like, oh, this is why. I didn't get I'm not in trouble. I was made to understand things in a loving way, in a caring way, in a productive way, instead of just getting yelled at and now I have to walk on eggshells because I don't know. No one even told me why.
Hoover, like, what exactly, like, can you give like an example of like what you're talking about?
Well, actually, I was going to ask you, for example, because what this brings us to is some of the things that, like Lomax mentioned, earrings is a specific example, which I guess they've changed the rule on that.
I'm like 95% sure. Okay. Yeah,
I think Kevin said so.
From the people I've talked to, yes, they have. It's just not in workouts or practice. You can't wear them.
Yeah, there's this. Everywhere else. There's this kind of gray area, I guess, between the disconnect. I mean, it's just the disconnect between white culture and black culture. I would love to hear some of your thoughts on some of the, because this is where I think it hurt some of the guys who really love the Iowa way and the Iowa culture that we built. You know, Lomax, in that 2015 season when you were a senior, we talked about culture so much and how the culture was so great. And I would love to know what part of that culture or what part of the Iowa way felt oppressive to black culture, or is that the wrong way to put it? Was there other little things in the program specifically? Because that's honestly where I don't understand. I felt like the Iowa way, the culture as a macro, was built and kind of every day worked on between black and white players. Yes, Doyle was at the top kind of enforcing that with the books that we read and the way he ran lift groups and stuff. But a culture isn't a culture unless the players, you know, the players in the end end up making it. And so for us, it was kind of hard to understand. And a lot of the Twitter, not a lot, a few of the Twitter stories that I saw spoke more to maybe some things that were just disciplinary or just a rigid kind of military-like rule than so much as white or black. But I would love to hear your thoughts on that and just you know, what you
guys. If I could interject here for just a second, I just wanted to say that this was kind of my point of question, is like how we were so blind to it. Because the three of us certainly bought into the Iowa way, and we knew that, like, we had to do what they were saying or else we weren't going to make it. We weren't talented enough. We didn't have any strikes to mess around with. And, like, that's kind of speaking to where Lomax is saying we're coming in totally different mindsets. Is it because we were in a different mindset and we were in our own way pretty narcissistic because we were going after our own goals? Is that why we didn't see that you guys were like being mistreated and we were just seeing it as like, man, some of these guys just aren't cut out for it? Like, huh, I guess that's just, maybe we can get their scholarship. Like, is that where our mind was at? Or like, I just don't understand, because I didn't know. I love you guys, man. Like,
yeah,
you guys knew that. It's been from the time I got there to the time I left, man, I didn't have a beef with nobody who we didn't deserve to have a beef with. You know, we were brothers, man. And so I didn't know this shit was going on. I don't think we all knew this shit was going on.
Hey guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify, one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app, search for Washed Up Walk-Ons on Spotify, or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
Drake, I have a question. Was the majority of your like friends, of your close friends on the team, were they black or white?
White.
So I feel like that's the Kluver, Ward, same thing.
Yeah, we all lived in the same house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Duh. I forgot. Okay. But anyway, I feel like the hardest, because I've had like a players that I play with, the hardest thing is like telling me, like that, like black players, like we literally talked about the things that went inside the facility every single day. Like, you know, like when we'd have like at lunch, like at dinners and lunch, like how there's always like a black table, like white table, like at the black table, this was the stuff we talked about every single day. It's like how, cause like we felt like as black players, like we felt like we couldn't be ourselves in the build. Like low, I mean, that's like at the end of the day, like that's the main root of the problem, is that black players did not feel like they could be themselves in the facility. It felt like that black players had to conform to being the white Iowa, like try hard football player.
Sure.
It's just not like black people having to conform to like society. That's just not like an Iowa thing, Iowa football thing. That's like a worldwide thing. I remember like my dad and my mom have made like great money. And so I've always been around like a decent amount of white people. And just growing up, like third and fourth grade, my dad used to always like talk on the phone for work and stuff. And he would always talk with like this voice. He would always talk with like a certain voice. Like whenever he was at work talking to work people on the phone, he would always talk in his work voice, but his work voice was trying to imitate a voice as a white male, as a white man, because he knows, and black people know this. I mean, low, he's in the business world now. I mean, not business world, but he's in the, you know what I'm saying? Like he's
not the business world. I'm in America.
Like he understands, like you get looked down upon talking like a black person. So it's like, even like my dad, like former NFL player, law degree, blah, 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 blah. Even my dad in corporate America, he still has to talk like, he has to imitate his voice like a white man.
Yeah.
And it's just like in college, like you should be able to be you. And like at Iowa, I think there's like 4 or 5% like Asians at Iowa, then the African American population, I think it's like 3%. I just know there's more Asians at Iowa than there is black people. And it's like it's just like when black players go to the facility, like that they should feel safe there. Like that's like they should feel like wherever when they go inside the facility, like they should be able to, of course there has to be a culture, but they should be able to feel and be themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the main root of the cause is like black players cannot feel themselves inside the Iowa football building or outside the Iowa football building.
And
it's so, like, so wait, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
My question,
I was just going to ask both you guys hit on this, like Lowe felt said, like, you know, like when you were out on the campus and you had to feel like you put on a shelf. And then when you got in the complex, like you felt like you should have been able to come out and like be yourself, but you couldn't, like, and then you said like how you felt like you had to conform, like this is something that the three of us just don't really understand.
Yeah.
Like,
what is like, being yourself?
What did you feel like you had to conform to? Like, is it the hats in the building? Is it the earrings? Is it something like bigger than that? Is it like,
dude, it's that, just, that's what, like, it's,
good.
I mean, I'm trying to explain, just be, it's being yourself. Like, I can't, like, it's literally be you. Like, that's the thing. Like,
I mean,
can't, like, black players cannot, dude, I've just,
it's yeah, literally no, be I, you. I understand, like, it's got to be hard to explain.
Like,
but,
it's hard to explain, but, I mean, you know, I like, mean, Lo could probably talk about that.
I just felt like when we were all in the locker room goofing around, man, that was just everyone being you. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I'll talk to it. I think because I know guys have touched on it as far as like just being yourself. Like I know guys have brought up, you know, what they felt like maybe their hairstyle was not accepted within the facility.
Okay.
Already touched on earrings. Is it simple things? Is where okay? Can I walk in? Can I walk into the complex with my with my tank top T-shirt on and go get, you know, a protein shake or something without them judging me? Can I have tattoos without them thinking
or me, oh, maybe he's a thug, or, you know, he's a gangster or something. Can't, you know, guys are literally like, dang, should I get this tattoo or not? You know, how are they going to view me if I get this tattoo? Because I'm just trying to look the part, you know, and here's it is right now. So when you see the guys that I will say are displayed, or, you know, the guys that are represented Iowa football, this is another thing that was tough for us. When you see the guys going to media day, Big Ten media day, in my time, I think only two black guys out of the three guys that get selected went to media day. My freshman year, I think it was Marvin McNutt and Mike Daniels. And no, so yeah, that was only one time, I believe, my playing days. But then I believe, I think last year, I think they sent Torin and OJ to Big Ten media days, like after the diversity task force in 2018 was pretty much calling them out on certain things. So, I mean, we're seeing this, and we feel like we're not even getting represented, like on the national level, on the national stage. You know, we're saying, you know, three out of four of the captains are white on the team, and you know that's tough. It's like, okay, as a black player, like, can we really, do we have an opportunity to even be the captain? Do we have an opportunity to be the face of Iowa football? It's almost like they were trying to portray, you know, the perfect white guy that represents Iowa football. That's who they wanted to be the main and highlight focus. And so I think like that was another thing where like guys were like, okay, if I want to go to Big Ten media days, I can't do this. I can't hang around with you guys. I gotta at least dress different or just act different or be different, because I'm trying to get to that level. I'm trying to get to that stage. So you got guys that are not being themselves, and they're trying to conform to the person that we feel like, okay, this is what I needed to be able to be the team captain or be able to even go to a Big Ten media day. I mean, like, guys, I mean, we're talking about that. We see that. And we're like, you know, why can't one of us go? Like, why can't more of us go? Or why can't it be, you know, this year it was majority black guys went. That next year it was majority white guys went. It's just a constant theme. And, like, that kills guys psychologically.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the biggest part is. Like, we're seeing it, and it's like, what is going on? I mean, even in the Hawkeye Challenge, captains that we used to do, my freshman year, just getting picked, majority of the black guys are, like, getting picked last. And it's because that we weren't represented on the leadership council. We weren't represented as leadership captains because a lot of the guys don't make it.
And yeah, for the Hawkeye Challenge in 2017,
worst one ever.
Yes, every captain. So there's eight captains. Every captain was white, and every first round pick. So the top 16 like picks, I guess, were white. And then like three picks into the second round, all white. Then it was Aaron Menz. Then I was after Aaron Menz. It's like, actually, yes, that's what happened. That's what started. That's what started Coach Ferentz. That's what started Coach
Miles got bring pissed. Us in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I forgot. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's what started Coach Ferentz. And actually, I end up winning the Hawkeye Challenge. I end up winning the Hawkeye Challenge that year, and Aaron Menz got second. And so we got these shirts that said like Hawkeye Challenge, like top 10. And every time like I trained back in Iowa, like that was the shirt I wore while I was training, just so everyone knew, I wish it was said like number one, but anyway, but every time, like I wore that, so everyone knew that because that was an accomplishment. I didn't get plaque or any. I think my team might finish last.
Yeah, but, no, we got shirts. We didn't get anything else. I got fourth, I think, just so the fans know.
But yeah, that's what started that.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that, and I remember talking with Coach Wallace a couple of weeks after that, because we had our individual player meeting. But yes, you are 100% correct. We did Hawkeye Challenge a little bit differently that year. It was like 3 weeks after winter program had started, so they had already accumulated everyone's points, and you could see like all the players who had negative points were in red, and there was like an uneasy look around, like, because I think you had gotten in trouble or something. That's why you weren't in negative points. And
yeah, something like
but that. Like we were like, okay, do we, it was difficult because it was like, do we take this guy who's got negative points, or do we take this guy who doesn't have negative points? But yeah, it was bad, because like I think the last 15 guys were all, there's like one white guy that was picked in the last 15, the rest are all black. And I'm talking with Coach Wallace like a couple weeks later. I'm just like,
Yeah, I think that like, yeah, you don't even got to say it. You think there was an uneasy look around the coaches, like we were eyeballing each other. It's like, oh shit, this is not good.
I have an interesting question, James, because I forgot that you had won that year of challenge. The Hawkeye challenge is the off season, right? It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, the coach, we make it a big deal. We literally bring everybody in. You sit down. It's like the NFL draft. There's eight teams. You get drafted. It's like, it's supposed to be a fun team building thing, all this stuff. The criteria for the challenge goes, it's a list. It's a mile list long, right? It has to do with your academics, your personal life off the field, on the field, challenges and strength conditioning.
Body weight,
food stuff.
Body weight for some reason is like the most important
thing. No, but I think for individual points, you wouldn't lose. For individual points, I don't think you lose points for body weight. Your team does for sure, but right. I don't think individually you lose points for body weight.
Sure.
Right. So
I may be wrong. I'm not sure about
regardless.
That.
I'm not 100% sure either, but like basically to win Hawkeye Challenge is you're going to pick guys who don't fuck up because
the Hawkeye Challenge was a good execution of the culture, what we expected, the way you were supposed to act and do things, right? And James, you won that. But at the beginning of the challenge, and because of the picks, those, you know, and we talked about how the bottom of the list was a bunch of players with a bunch of negative,
like you maybe you got in trouble downtown. Maybe you right. were late to a lift or something. Maybe you were
right.
just missed a workout.
I guess my question is do you feel the Hawkeye Challenge was fair considering you won it? Or do you think it was any of the criteria about Hawkeye Challenge was racial, like racist one way or the other? Because if you were able to win on a team of 115 people as a black player, it would seem that, and then Aaron got second, so we have two black players at the top. It would seem that they were racially fair, probably, at surface level. But at beginning, before it all started, you know, there was a long list of black guys who had negative points who probably felt at that point that it was kind of racially skewed. So I'm interested to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, I won because I was the best athlete on the team. And so every time we did like those Thursday, Friday sprint challenges, like easy 500 points, wherever it was. Like I think I was on the dean's list. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I was on the dean's list. So I got the academic points. I literally won every, like when we do sled sprints, I won that. Power pushes, I won that. Like I won so many points from doing that. But it was just, I mean, I don't think it's racially, I mean, were you a captain that year? So how did you look at a black player? Any of you guys captains? How did you guys look at the black players that year?
No, I was not a captain, but I was like, they said like, oh, the first round lieutenant. Pick is going to be your co-captain or something.
Right.
So I was Bo's co-captain or lieutenant or whatever you want.
So in that instance, James, we really can't speak
to your question. Oh, if you want to answer the question, no, like our strategy between me and Bo is okay. Who's not going to fuck up? I don't care if you're a good athlete. I don't care if you're an average at class. I want someone who's going to show up on time.
It's assets versus liabilities.
Not miss a tutor and like all that stuff. That was the strategies because it's so, like the perfect week. At the end of the week, you get like 10,000 points, and then like.
So is it more likely that you would pick a white player not to mess up compared to a black player? Like with like picking players, like is there more black players that would mess up compared to white players? You guys,
the chart. I'm going to be honest with you. The chart
based on the chart,
based on the beginning chart,
of the thing, said okay. Yes. Is and, it that there was like 40 guys who were in negative points at draft day? I want to say like 20 of them were black. So given that there was 100 and something guys on the team, yeah, statistically, apparently so. And that was just that year. But, you know, you can't – see, that's what I hate about this is like you can't
throw a bunch of people into a group. I hate that. I want to treat somebody on an individual by individual basis. You know, like I treat Lomax completely differently than I treat Kluver, because Kluver's a slapdick and Lomax is a straight shooter. I treat you this way differently than I'm going to treat you differently than Drake, because you got a solid head on your shoulders. Drake likes to put his fist through a wall. So, I mean, yeah, it ended up poorly, disproportionately. Black players were chosen in later rounds.
Let's swing the conversation this way. Yeah. This is
that's a tough question.
I would actually ask a counter question. Am I wrong for doing that?
Wrong for doing what?
We had, I think, 3 black players on our team, 2 of which were selected in the later rounds.
I don't think so, Kev, because the goal is to win, right? And if guys have in 3 weeks proven that they're a liability in this competition based on these criteria, black or white, because there are plenty of white guys who are liabilities as well. I can name 20 of them off the top of my head right now.
I would say 3 of the biggest liabilities in the history of the Hawkeye Challenge were white.
I'm thinking of the same person.
Wait, who? If you could, like,
we're not gonna bust people out here.
two of them were before your time.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
But what I'm saying is based on when you select those guys, if in 3 weeks they've already accumulated, like, you're probably already trending the way you're gonna trend for the entire year, right? That you have to assume that. So you pick the guys who are trending upward and the guys who are trending downward.
And you know what's actually, it's kind of funny you said that. If I would have ended up staying for my senior year, I would have been a captain.
Yes.
100%. I would have picked every single person. My entire team would have been everybody in negative points. Everyone who messed up. And I was going to end up winning the challenge, because I would have everything, like body weight. I would have went to every Saturday. I would have went to everyone's house. Sunday, I would went to everyone's house and made sure like they made weight. Like I always thought about that. Like if I was gonna be a captain, I would pick the worst team possible, and then we were gonna win. And I've been considered like a legend. Yeah. But
I mean, guys, we forget about that. Ike would like have Akram come over and make him a shake on Sunday nights. Like Drake, you lived with him. Like you can attest to that. I mean, there are guys that did it, but obviously not to the level that you were planning on doing it.
Dude, I guess that would have
been an awesome thing to see it would have made the team a hell of a lot better if you were able to accomplish it.
The root of that question, I guess, was getting back to the whole Iowa way, the culture. I'm wondering if in Jordan and James, in your guys' opinion, was the Iowa way racist, or was it more just who was leading it? Was it Coach Doyle? Because obviously we're recording this. Coach Doyle was.
And then on top of that, I think a very important question that needs to be asked and just be answered honestly, regardless of what your opinion is. Do you think that Coach Doyle is a racist at the root? Is that purely the issue? Or do you think it's a racially insensitive thing where he was power hungry and he just kind of, you know, used his power in a pretty insensitive manner? I'm just curious because, again, I've said this multiple times, I didn't understand that it was this bad.
Yeah. So for me, like, I'm loath to call someone a racist. One, because that's such a that's such a powerful word. Like, if you're calling somebody a racist, you better have, you know, some evidence, something to back it up. So, like, for me personally, I've never heard him say anything like racist towards me, like, ever. Now I have heard him say like the racially insensitive jokes, I've heard the guys come back and tell me, okay, this is what Coach Doyle said. Now I'm sure there's guys that can probably speak to hear him saying racially explicit remarks. Myself, I cannot say that. But what I will say, I do think like the power and the authority that he had, I do think it was a little too much. He entrusted him with a lot of power, and you know, as you think, okay, he's the guy that's around them throughout the year without any restrictions. I'm going to him to give me accurate feedback. Okay, who can play for us? Who can help us this year? Sure. I think when he had that amount of power, it was misused and it wasn't handled properly, and I think he did abuse that power. So That I'll say that to your point on that one. And as far as like you're saying, like, was the Iowa culture racist? I don't know if like racist once again is the right term, but I do think it was biased. I will say it was biased.
That's good.
Was it bias to moving back towards that first point we brought up to guys who came from a different upbringing? Is that the kind of bias you're talking about? Kind of.
Yeah.
I'll shoot you straight. Kevin, Drake, and I, we see the Iowa culture as a very disciplined, military-like, kind of just by the book kind of thing. And going back to some of the Twitter things I saw, for me, my knee-jerk reaction is that isn't because of race, it's because of discipline. You know, like something like body weight. Body weight isn't racial to me. It's just, are you disciplined enough to stay on body weight?
Nobody mentioned body weight as
something. Okay. I feel you on that one. But I saw a couple tweets that were like, I got kicked out of a workout because I wasn't wearing the right socks, or because that was just like everyone was supposed to wear Iowa issue.
I'll give you one because I saw you go back and forth with Matt on Twitter, and because I saw you guys do that, I could talk about it. So I think, you know, Matt, he has told his story as far as, you know, he was in a workout, he had spit on the turf and, you know, kicked him out of the workout. And then he said the next day, the white player spit on the turf and he didn't yell at him, didn't do anything, he didn't get kicked out. And I saw you reply with Matt saying, you know, you got kicked out.
Yeah.
And what I say to that is that perception is reality, right? So, you know, if, you know, Matt, he didn't know the story about you getting kicked out. He didn't know that. Now, for guy, if I'm a black player, we already feel uncomfortable in this program.
Yeah.
I get berated and yelled and I'm kicked out. And then the next day, you know, my white counterpart does the same thing and there's no consequence.
I feel you. You know,
perception is reality. So that's where guys feel like, okay, it's a double standard.
And then Coach Doyle tells the coaches, he tells Coach Parker, oh, Matt got kicked out of a workout. Oh, Matt's not focused, blah, 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 blah. And so it's just that him getting kicked out of a workout, it has so much more impact on just that one day, him getting kicked out. Like, that's what I think Lo was saying about how, like, how much power, like, Coach Doyle had and how Coach Doyle reports to coaches on how the players are doing during the offseason. Coach Doyle could go through the list, like, yeah, okay, Matt, he got kicked out of a workout. He just doesn't say what. He just says he just got kicked out of a workout. And then they're like, wow, okay, Matt, he's not focused. Okay, Coach Parker's like, okay, I'm not going to play Matt because of what happened, because he got kicked out of a workout. Like, it's just – Just one thing has so much impact, and it just builds on top of each other.
Do you think that in my case, again, Matt versus me, because the story Matt told is almost exactly to like – he ran me off the field. You haven't done shit for this program. Go back to fucking Marshalltown. Like, all this stuff. Do you think that the aftermath is different? Is that what you're getting at here?
Yeah.
Do you think that it wasn't a situation where Coach Doyle went – I don't know if it's true or not. Do you think that Coach Doyle went back and told the coaches that I was kicked out of the workout? Do you think that he told them that I wasn't focused? That kind of stuff. You don't think so?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Because I don't know. He very well could have. I know the coaches knew about it.
Just the coaches are a tight group. They know everything that's going on. They talk to each other. I would say yes, Kluver. Coach White was your position coach at the time. Coach White probably knew you got kicked out of a workout.
Yeah.
And then I want to pose this question to you guys, actually. So, you know, you've heard me and James talk, and, you know, it sounds like as far as you guys saying, okay, is it, you know, I always perceived it as, you know, it was the Iowa way. I didn't perceive it as, you know, being racist. Was I blind to it? And so my answer to it, because Drake had asked that question earlier, and I say, you know, I think you were blind to it because you guys were the majority, so you guys probably didn't really notice what was going on. Now, if what I would say to you guys, if you guys had went to like a historically black college university, and you know you're the minority now, and now you have now you have more black players on the team. Your coaching staff doesn't look like you, predominantly black. Now, in that same instance, like where you're thinking you're Matt Hankins, in that instance where, you know, if you spit on the turf and then, you know, the black coach yelling at you, kicking you out of the program, then the white kid, I mean, then the black kid spits on it the next day. You know, how do you feel like as like you're going – I feel like – why is it stereotype? Is it prejudice a little bit? Is he biased? Like, what's going on here? So I think you guys view it from that lens, you could probably start to see it a little bit from you know, how the black players feel like throughout the program.
Right. And you know, like Matt had no idea that Kluver had gotten kicked out of a workout for 2 minutes. So he doesn't know. And so he sees it as like, motherfucker. Like, yeah, I can see that.
You're right. I understand how putting myself in that situation, the line is almost invisible and you would see it as discrimination based on race. I guess the problem with that I just had was the culture stuff. You know, I saw a couple times it was just like a couple of the times where I saw people telling a story, like they got kicked out. Like I know that they showed up late. It wasn't because of something, you know, like some of this stuff was more.
I mean, this is what I would say. I think that there were stories that, you know, I'll come out and say, okay, there were stories where I felt like, okay, yeah, that, I don't know if that was. There were guys that were capitalizing on issues that we were trying to bring to the forehand and say, okay, right, this is not right. And now you got guys coming saying their story.
Personal vendetta stuff.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, there were some guys that were probably capitalizing on trying to,
okay,
get another story where, you know, I felt like, okay, that really wasn't. I mean,
we knew. Yeah,
you got in trouble. So I do see there was a lot of other valid stories as well, though.
Yeah, 100%.
But then when those other outside stories come in, it can start to undermine
the bigger part. So that's kind of what I want to go back at the beginning is, you know, you air it out on Twitter. Now everyone who's got a beef with Iowa football is just piling in. It's like, does it kind of undermine the message, or, you know, kind of thing? Or is it like, you know, like the fans like see all this and then like, okay, bad, bad, bad. Oh wait, this one's complete bullshit. Do I believe A, B, and C now? So yeah. I don't know. I mean,
it was a fan question too. One of the fans asked, did you guys feel like a couple of the guys came in and kind of hijacked the movement with some personal shit that didn't really need to be said?
Personally, I mean, there were some guys, but at the same time, it's like you can't discredit someone else's experience. I don't know what you felt in that situation. It could have been different. So I got to really sit down and hear him out, and I need to hear why did he feel he was treated that way before I can just say, no, that's BS. Sure. I'm not trying to hear it. You know, he may have experienced something else. It could be something else that was underlying that issue. So before I even try to discredit it, I at least need to, you know, hear him out and let him state his case.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. Do you feel like everyone was a blank slate when they showed up at the day one? Like day one, you haven't even met Coach Doyle. Like you met Coach Doyle and you're official. You show up day one. Do you feel like everyone's a blank slate?
No. Especially for the players who were probably 4 stars and who had a social media following.
Yep.
Or who had you know, whose name was
a little hype behind them.
Had some hype on them. I think it was even tougher for those guys. Now I can even speak on Nico Law, who me and him coming in freshman year, and you know, Nico was like, you know, I think Nico might have been like a 4-star recruit out of Maryland. I can't remember. He was either 3 or 4. But like Nico was doing all these things in high school before he even got to Iowa. Now, you know, Nico, you know, he had his certain circumstances and stuff at Iowa. I won't speak on that, but what I will say to answer your question, do I feel like guys, it was like, it was almost, they had it out for him.
Yeah.
Now, Nico, his personality, he's outspoken. He's gregarious. And he had a podcast show in high school talking about a lot of stuff. And it was, I remember the first workout we come in and like those workout.
And it's got to go back and listen to some of those podcasts, but go ahead.
I mean, like he's talking about, he's bringing up the podcast. So it's like, he didn't start, with a clean slate. It was just like, wow.
This
like
is hey. We brought up on our episode that Doyle had ammo on everybody.
I mean, he had ammo. So I'm like, no, I don't think everybody had a clean slate.
So yeah, you think so? In your opinion,
well, I mean, Doyle, like a guy in our class, Nick Shimnick, called out his teammates, like Bethard, Rudock, Sokol. I'm coming for you guys' spots, and like,
yeah, like,
Doyle
yeah.
fucking came after him. Yeah, so
yeah. I think okay, we can so all agree that Doyle's ammo bank was bigger for some guys than others.
Of course. I mean, yeah, of course.
James, we asked for questions, and one of the big ones for you was LaShawn, your brother, was at Iowa for 2 years before you came into the program.
3 years.
3 years before you came into the program.
Two.
The question in certain words, I there was three or four of them, was did you talk to him about the culture, about the way of doing things that KF and Doyle had implemented? Or was that not a conversation? Were you unaware of what you were stepping into, or how did that work between you and your brother?
No, I was fully aware. I mean, my brother just told me that when I get to Iowa, I better, one, play the game, two, do the Iowa way, you're not going to make it. Just those two things. I mean, he really didn't go into much detail, but he just told me, like, you must do those two things or you're not going to make it. And so, I mean, that's not very, play the game, like, okay, do whatever the coaches are telling you to do. Even if you don't like it, do it anyway. Body weight, make sure you always make your body weight. Just things like that. And, I mean, he told me that, like, coming, like, before I committed, he was like, if you're not ready to do these things, you're not going to make it here. And the same – and I tell everyone, like, when I used to be on, like, recruiting panels, because they used to always – I felt like I was great on recruiting panels. I used to always tell recruits, like, you have to be – I wouldn't go into detail – and I used to always tell recruits, like, you must be ready to do the Iowa way. And
that'd be on your shit.
Yeah, you got to, or you're not going to make it.
That was another question as well, is how did you guys talk to recruits that were black during your time?
Yeah, I just said, like,
Low, I just said, did you have anything on that one?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was similar to what James said. I just told him, like, look, hey, it's a different culture. It's a different environment here. But of course, like, I'm not going to, like, go into a lot of detail because I don't want – you know, I'm worried about, okay, well, Lowe's out here discouraging recruits to come to Iowa. Like,
right.
You know, you want me to tell them, like, hey, you probably shouldn't come here. No, that's not
right.
That's like, the thing. It's like,
yeah, I mean, even for me, when I was like my hosts were Micah and Prater, Sean Prater. And so I'm like, I get here and then they start telling me all the bad stuff. And I'm like, dude, why ain't you telling me this when I was getting recruited? Like, you could have gave me a head up.
You
could
have gave me a head
up. So
I feel you.
It's that weird dynamic there where it's like, okay, like,
sure.
Can you really be vulnerable? Can you tell the truth? It's just like, it's tough. You
know?
But to your point though, like a lot of the guys, like, you know, Iowa football, like it's a special program. Like, I mean, like my best friends, I met at Iowa. So it's so much love. And I feel like we have for the program and we just want it to be a more inclusive environment for all. That's it. Like, I mean, we love the program. We're not bashing Iowa football at all. So
yeah. Sure.
Like, I'm having fun with my friends here. Like, so of course I'm telling the recruits, like, yeah, like, I mean, I have my guys, like, I love this place. I love being here with them. Now, do we have to deal with some other stuff when we go into the football complex? Yes. But if I wouldn't change my decision at all, just because of the guys that I met and the relationships that I built. So
yeah, I mean, you put it perfectly there. I mean, like, we all love Iowa football and we want to see it be the best it can be. I'm pretty much done talking about in the past. How do we move forward? I know Lomax, you've talked with KF a little bit. You know, we've had that Zoom call with all the, like, there's like 60 or 70 former players on there. Like, what is the best way to move forward? Because we started that diversity committee. It would have been my senior year, and I know they've been reporting to KF at least once a year since then. I know they've made some rule changes. I know for a fact, James, that they've started playing more rap music in the weight room.
Yes, sir.
Which I was all for.
Which,
that,
honestly,
that country shit really did need to go.
Yeah, like the white guys wanted that too, man. Come on.
Yeah, so the music improved a whole lot when Mark came into the weight room. All right, Mark helped out about it.
I love but, Mark.
Yeah, Mark's the best.
This is a question too. I'm glad you went there, Kevin.
But yeah, so like, what are your guys's, like, what do we do from here? Like, things seem to have been improving since we left, and apparently they had a huge meeting where open mic people like shouting at each other out like 2 weeks ago and like aired it all out, like fucking aired it all out,
and they've made change. Doyle's gone.
It seems like things are on the right path.
I do think they're on the right path. I think like Doyle's gone, and I think you've heard guys
white and black speaking out, like, you know, how it feels like guys, it's like a lift off their shoulder. Like guys can finally be comfortable talking about issues that they wouldn't have spoken on beforehand. So I think Iowa football is on the right path. I know, like you guys have mentioned, I know they're like restructuring, you know, some policies that may have been outdated that are no longer, you know, relevant to today's world. Cause we're living in a new world, really. I mean, you got social media, everything is just different. And then, I just feel like I spoke on it a little earlier, you know, if I'm going to recruit this kid, you know, you're not just getting his physical attributes on the field, but you're also getting him as a person. Like, I got to know this kid. I got to know what I can say to him and what I cannot, because even though something I may say is, I don't view it as being degrading or harmful, I don't know how his brain is receiving that. So I think it's just really coming to understand, okay, what player did I recruit? Okay, who can I yell at? Okay, no, but who do I need to bring to the side? I need to know what motivates them and what gets them to be able to peak at their performance and their level. So yeah, I think it really just comes down to understanding the players that you're getting, and then, okay, knowing that, okay, I can't yell at him the certain way that I can yell at him. You know, it's just different backgrounds that come from different areas, just understanding your players more. And the one thing we did on 2015, which I think was really valuable, was Lon Olenjack, he took us on our senior leadership retreat. It wasn't a senior leadership retreat, just a leadership retreat. And he paired us up with guys that did not look like one another and came from different backgrounds. So my partner was Austin Blythe. I talked to Austin, and now keep in mind, me and Austin came to the program in 2011 together. I talked to him the most in my entire Iowa football career on that leadership retreat than I did the all 5 years we were playing together. Because, like, we really didn't know each other or understand it. Like, I got to know about his family. He got to know about my family, where I came from. Desmond was on that leadership retreat. And for them guys to hear his story, his background, it opens their eyes up. It's like, wow, like, I didn't even know this. And sure. So it's really just getting to understand, like, not talking to your teammates. I know for me, when I was James talked about it, like, you had the white kids and you had the black kids eating in the lunch halls together separately. And for me, like, I didn't care. I was eating with whoever, and then I would always get jokes like, "Oh, Lo, why you go over there eating with them?" Or like, "What are you doing over here, Lomax?" Like, for me, like, because I said I already had got that in high school, so I was used to it. It was nothing to me.
Right. But yeah, I'll speak to that real quick and let you get, like, 2015, like, closest team we ever had. Like, everyone just seemed like they were friends with everyone.
Yeah, it's just understanding one another. We gotta talk more. Guys gotta figure out, okay, where is this guy from? Like, who is his family? Mm-hmm. What happened in his life? I think that, I mean, that's what it really, guys just gotta talk more and open up and get to know one another.
Yeah. Really. And I will say this too, is like 2016, 2017, the coaches made it a point to say, hey, when you're eating, eat with someone you normally wouldn't eat with. And
yeah,
we did, like we tried, but, you know, like, guys would sometimes just get set in their ways. I got my five friends. I just want to sit by these guys.
So it sounds like the personal stuff, just learning, doing more things, more activities, finding more ways to connect personally away from the game of football would be beneficial.
Outside of Summit on Saturday night too, because, you know, yeah, we're all going to be
outside
there.
Of Summit. Yeah. hard question, and it's not like you guys, you know, have all the. You don't have to have all the power in answering this, and it's not just your opinion, but Coach Doyle's gone, so they've made one staff change inside of the facility. There was implications of others as well from several. James and Jordan, in your opinion, is getting rid of Coach Doyle, replacing him, and moving forward enough, or are there other people that need to be addressed?
You want to touch on that first, James?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I mean, if, like Lo said, like if yeah, okay, Coach Doyle's gone, and I'm not sure what they're gonna do with the strength and conditioning, but if there's like some type of like training for like the staff members that talk about Lo, like helping the coaches understand like these kids' backgrounds and like where they're coming from. I feel like that'll help. That'll be a lot easier. But I don't know. I don't think there needs to be any other staff decisions except for that.
Okay. That was one of the big ones. They,
Jordan, I mean, you can touch on it if you want to.
Otherwise, no, I was just going to say, I mean, like, I feel like seeing like Coach Doyle go out, then I think like any other coaches whose names were brought up, they put them on notice. Like, whoa,
whatever we were doing, that we got to come, we got to figure out, okay, maybe I was doing something unintentionally wrong, you know? So yeah. I think it's definitely, you know, everyone's eyes are open now, and they are aware of, okay, maybe I did something wrong. I need to kind of rectify that issue. So
do you think that it's going to be possible for all the players, current and future, to pretty much resolve this issue within themselves, truly let it go, give all these guys a second chance that maybe they didn't trust in the past, to build a good trusting relationship and make it a more like a true family like we were trying to be?
Yeah, I think so. I like the, you know, I don't follow like the Hawkeye recruits a lot, but like the quarterback Deuce Hogan, who's coming in with that class, I think
they've been crazy.
He seems like a really good dude. Like, he seems like he has that whole class galvanized, and you know,
seemed like a tight group. Yeah,
seems like a really tight group. So you know, I think special things are gonna. I don't want to put anything on those guys, but I think these guys can do special things just like from the camaraderie aspect that I've seen. So, but I think, yeah, the guys, they can change it. So they can be a part of the change as well. Just getting to know one another. And I think it's also, it's a two-way street. Not only do the players have to be able to get to know one another, but the coaches got to be willing to make that change as well.
That's what I meant, was the coaches. Do you think that the players will just be like, okay, you know what, past is the past. We had this real monumental day in the history of this program, and let's move forward with the blank slate we wanted from the start.
Yeah, I think the players are now allowed. Like, the players I've talked to, they told me that they're allowed to speak up more, and their voices are actually being heard. Like, it feels like their voices are actually being heard by the coaches.
Yeah. So did you just kind of step back again? Did you, when you were meeting with KF, did you feel like you weren't being heard?
Damn, that's a tough one. I mean,
I know I can talk about it because it's really tough because, like, you know, guys, like, we all seen it. You know, Coach Ferentz and Coach Doe, they came in together. So, you know, that's his best friend. That's his right-hand man. And
yeah. So I mean.
Like, you know how you guys are extremely tight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if someone comes to you that, you know, you don't know him as well as you, Tyler, you know, Kevin, you know, Drake, and, you know, they say, hey, like, I don't know about Kevin. He's doing this. You know, your first –
Well, I know Drake's throwing me under the bus. I mean, we're tight, but you don't really like me.
Your first response is to be a little defensive. Like, you know, I know this guy. We've been together five years. We went through wars together. Like, this is my guy. Like, I know him as a person. So I really don't know you. So how can I know what you're telling me is really truthful or not? So I think guys were like, you know, guys were scared to, like, come out and say something. Like, if I say this, is this going to affect, you know, my playing time, my ability to stay all 4 or 5 years at Iowa? And that's tough. Like,
so, yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, so James, you said that you guys didn't bring up anything specifically about Coach Doyle in those meetings. So I want to clarify something, because I did speak with somebody who was on the 2018 committee, and he said that they didn't speak directly to KF. They met with Liz Tovar, Broad, and then an individual representative who would then take their, like, notes from the meeting and take that to KF, so they had some feeling of, you know, like anonymity of some sort. First off, did you guys meet directly with KF?
Yeah, it was directly with him.
Okay. Yeah, because when I was talking to this player who was on the 2018, he said he didn't want to be named. He said that they raised some of the similar, like, earrings, hats and music, but they didn't say anything about Coach Doyle in particular. I mean, obviously you weren't there, so I don't even know why I'm asking you to speak about it, but do you think KF could have done more back then than he's currently doing now, 2-3 years ago? Or do you think he did enough, or I don't know, obviously not enough, but do you think he acted appropriately given the information he was given?
Yeah, I mean, you said there's more rap music in the weight room. Players can wear earrings. Players can wear hats. Coaches are not allowed to comment on players' hair or tattoo. Like, those are all changes that
– I know Drake loves the tattoo one because he got howled for his tattoo.
Like those are all those are all problems that we addressed with Coach Ferentz, and that he did do before the Coach Doyle stuff. So, I mean, yes, I do think Coach Ferentz has acted appropriately on the information that he was given.
So the real issue, as we kind of close this down, is he just wasn't given all of the information that you guys wanted to give at that time.
I'll tell you what, the point that Lo made about their relationship and being afraid.
Right. Like, yeah, I can totally understand, like, hey, you know, there's no one above Coach Doyle besides KF. So if I want to complain about Coach Doyle, I got to go to KF. And those guys, you know, showed up in 99 together. Like, I can completely understand, like, saying, okay, like, I feel like I'm being mistreated by Coach Doyle. I don't really feel I can understand that, you know. I can totally understand that. You know, I think KF would have listened. I like to think KF's like I hold KF in extremely high regard. But I can understand how that's a tough thing to do.
I mean, it's impossible. I fully understand how that's an impossible thing. Like, it's possible. I get it.
Like, I mean, I think, like, if somebody, like, came to me about my brother, like, you know, my brother who I'm close with, and I'm going to be dismissive to it. Like, I don't – even if you did come – like, I'm probably going to be a little biased towards the relationship just because of the relationship that we have. Like, I know him. Like, I know my brother. Like, I don't –
And we've seen all the time, like, Coach Ferentz and Coach Doyle are lifting with each other in the weight room. Like, we know – like, that's actually coming out meetings. Stuff, like, we come out meetings and we see them – we see Coach Ferentz, like, benching or something, but – I mean, we know, like, yes, they've been here together a long time, but we know they spend a lot of time with each other.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, like, he says Coach Doyle is Coach Ferentz's number two. There's no question about it.
But in your opinion, KF is still the guy moving forward. Like, he can get this done.
I can speak for myself. I know other guys have mixed opinions on it, but me personally, I feel like I've known Kev, like I've met with him, had genuine conversation with him. I think he's the guy that can definitely lead the change. So that's me personally speaking on his behalf, but I think he can lead the change.
James?
And I'll speak to that. I was a little bit in your guys' boat when I played there. KF and I had a bit of a rocky relationship, to say the least. I respected him as a coach. I think he respected me as a player. I would like to think he did. But aside from that, I don't know. Our relationship wasn't that tight. And I didn't feel like he really, you know, he just wasn't my best friend. But it was after I got done playing and things in my life went way south that KF proved to me that he was just like a great human being. And our relationship was fully mended from there. And so, like, I guess I can kind of see where you guys are coming from. And I don't know. I just had to get that thought out there.
Yeah.
So, that brings us to Max has got to go do real things, and everybody else does. We got a good 90-minute conversation in here, I think, that hopefully will help the fans who listen to this and the people who love Iowa and Iowa football kind of sift through the whole situation. It sounds like things are being done, and – sounds like the right people are in place to do those things. James or Lo, anything else you guys want to say before we close this thing down?
I just appreciate you guys for, like, just, you know, wanting to have this uncomfortable discussion. So, you know, I appreciate you guys for doing that. And like I said, I commended James earlier for being the first one to come on and just step out. So, just want to thank you guys for having us. And I don't know, James, you got something too?
Yeah, I appreciate you guys for having us. Thank you for listening to us. Talk about my time at Iowa. Like, I loved Iowa. I enjoyed my time. I thank Coach Doyle, Coach Ferentz, all the coaches. Without them, I would not be in the position I am in now. But it's unfortunate things had to go the way they had to go. But, I mean, if I know this is making Iowa football closer, and hopefully this helps them play better this upcoming fall. And for all, like, the media people too, this is the last interview I'm doing on this. So please don't, please. That's why I asked, like, the question and like have people, I texted Drake, like, if fans want question answered, because I'm not talking about this. The people I need to talk to are the people inside Iowa Athletics at UIowa, not the 100%. Media trying to get more stuff, more information.
It's a family issue, man. We're going to take care of it as a family.
I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, seriously, guys, we can't thank you all enough. This was an awesome episode. It's awesome just to hear about you guys talk about your experiences. I know, goddamn, we got the two guys with the ugliest golf swings in the goddamn world on this podcast. James went viral for it, and y'all seen Lomax, but it's worse. It's worse. It was fun.
Of course, man.
We got to go, dude. Anytime you want to go to the range, we'll work on that ugly ass swing of yours.
Wow. I mean, you just can't. You can't come out like this.
Lomax, dude, we got to have you back for a fun episode where we don't have to talk about the uncut. We can just talk back, shoot the shit, talk about Seth Wallace and Phil Parker tearing into one another during meetings.
That was funny.
Dude, seriously.
That was the funniest experience of us.
Oh, my God, time. Dude. That was so much fun.
Yeah. James, we'll have you back too, man. We'll have you back too.
Sure.
We appreciate the time. Like we said, that's episode 125 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons. And
if you guys don't like this and share this, then fuck you, because this shit was great.
Wow. Okay. And that's how this ends. We'll talk at you again soon.
Peace. All right.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.